Hey there, this is Emily Hoover, and we are so glad that you are listening to the Mission Point Community Church podcast. It's our prayer that this helps you grow in your relationship with Jesus and encourages you to show and share the love of Jesus everywhere you go. Thanks for tuning in. Now let's dive into the message.
I have the privilege of starting a series this morning that we are simply calling End Times, Certain Mystery, because when it comes to the conversation about end times, there are certain things that are very certain. And then there are a lot of things that are certainly mysteries to us. Over the course of the summer, we were in a series that we called Asking for a Friend. And during that series, so many of you submitted some of the hot topic questions, and we tackled those in that series. But we mentioned that some of the questions you all asked us were just and a little bit too heavy or involved for us to tackle in a single sermon. And so we would maybe try and respond to those in a series. And this is one of those. What is all the fuss about the end times? Are we living in the end times? Should we be paying any unique or specific attention to the things that are happening in the world around us right now? Is what's happening in the Middle East of any unique significance? I just read between services that there was another attack and 19 more people died just this morning, at least. Our time. End times. When we talk about end times, here's what we're talking about. It's simply a conversation about the events leading up to and surrounding the return of Jesus Christ to earth. It's the events leading up to and surrounding the return of Jesus Christ to earth. The age-old belief of the church is that there is a literal day on our literal calendar when Jesus will literally split the clouds and return to our literal world. That day is coming in the future, and he is going to judge the living, and he is going to judge the dead, and he's going to usher in the era of eternity. Our time and our clocks as we know them will be useless. Jesus will begin forever and ever and ever and ever. Jesus is coming back. By the way that you respond to that, the way you respond to that has everything to do with the nature of your relationship with Jesus. Jesus is coming back. What does that do for you? Now, in my defense, I love my father very much. However, when I was a kid, when my mom would announce to me, "Kondo, your father is on his way home," that never stirred in me deep feelings of joy and delight. Matter of fact, when my mom would announce that to me, she wasn't announcing to me that my dad was on his way home to stir feelings of delight. She was saying it as a threat to get me to sit down and be quiet and behave. And it usually worked. Because growing up, I had a very funky relationship with my father's rules. Like any opportunity I could take to break them, particularly in his absence, I would. And so my mom would tell me like, "All right, buddy's coming back." And I would freak out. The question in the course of this series that I'll be so curious to know, Jesus is on his way back. What does that do to you? Does that stir in you delight? Does that stir in you dread? Or does that stir in you kind of like, whatever, doesn't really matter? My hope is that if nothing else, that this series will serve as a heart check for all of us. How do I feel about Jesus making his way back to earth? Okay, before we get into it, I just want to make a couple of notes about this conversation. First, I want to say something about the confusion, For decades, the church has gone out of its way to avoid the conversation about end times because it can often be so confusing. If you read the book of Revelation, like, what do you do with all of this symbolism? And what do you do with these sequences? And like, I don't even know what is this beast and why are its eyes there? And like, it doesn't make any sense. And it becomes such a confusing conversation. It feels coded and very unclear, making it very hard to understand, which leaves room for so many people to have so many interpretations of what all of it could possibly mean. And when things tend to feel confusing, we oftentimes tend to avoid engaging them. It's too confusing. We can't figure it out, so we're out. And many churches have gone that route. Hey, stay in the Gospel of John. Stay out of the revelation that Jesus gave to John. That will swallow you in confusion. That's why if many of us are honest, we're like, Leviticus? Nope. Revelation? Certainly not. And that has been the case, unfortunately, in the church. And sadly, many of us pastors have avoided this conversation, if for no other reason, because it forces us to have to say too many, like, I don't know. Pastor? You don't know the word of the Lord? Like, I have no clue. I thought you went to seminary. I thought you had a direct line with Jesus. I'm like, I don't know, right? And so at times, we stay away from those and we stay in the areas that feel a little safer and a little bit, you know, more in our competence zone, which we're not even very competent in those either. I'm asking you, have you in any way shied away from the end times conversation? And if so, I hope that this series will be an invitation to lean back into this conversation, or maybe to lean into this conversation for the very first time with a deeper curiosity and a greater courage, because Jesus is coming back. And that is the most beautiful declaration that we could make about the future. Jesus is coming back. If you have a relationship with Jesus, nothing should fire you up more than Jesus is coming back. If I tell you I love my wife, woo! She's the best. I love being with her. And you're like, that's amazing, because she's actually coming over right now to surprise you. Like, no, why? Does she have to? You'd be like, sound like mixed messages, bro. Jesus, Jesus, how we trust you. He's coming back. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Take your time, Jesus. I still have some goals. Huh? I still haven't kissed a whoever or whatever it is. So take your time, Jesus. Right? There's some hugs in my future. Right? And so this to me is a fascinating invitation to engage this. And to let it speak to us. And if you don't have a relationship with Jesus Christ, the announcement that Jesus is returning to judge the living and the dead is the most significant declaration on your calendar. All I'm trying to say is it would be crazy for us to shy away from interacting with a conversation about end times because it feels confusing. So I hope this series is an invitation to curiosity and courage to engage the single greatest future declaration that there is. Jesus is coming back. All of history is leading to that day. Let me say something about the controversy. As you can imagine, where there's a lot of confusion and there's a lot of varying opinions, then people love to fight about stuff, right? And so it becomes a very controversial conversation, right? Like, I'm sorry. How can you believe that that symbol means this? There's no way it could possibly mean that. How can you honestly, in your rational mind, Can you believe that the sequence of events leading up to Jesus' return could look like that? There is no way it looks like that. So I disagree with you. Like, how could you think the beast is that? That's the beast is not. You're the beast. You're a beast, right? And so I'm going to worship in my own church. I'm going to worship in my own church, right? And it has become a cause of controversy and division. And churches have split over the differences in how they interpret the events leading up to and surrounding the return of Jesus Christ. And after a while, what the churches have done is they become super smart and they'd be like, hey, listen, we don't talk about end times at our church. Oh, why not? It's like politics, right? At Thanksgiving. We just don't talk about it because you know how uncle gets, right? And so it becomes one of those things that we start to treat that way. And I just want to go on record and say a couple of things about that. Here at Mission Point, there will always be room for varying opinions about the symbolism and the sequence around the return of Jesus Christ. The people on our staff and on our elder team have very different views about this, right? Like, what, you really believe that? Yep. But it has never been a source of division, because what matters most to us regarding the end times is Jesus is physically and visibly coming back to the earth. Can we agree on that? Amen. Then let's storm the gates of hell. Now, you may be slow again into the gates of hell based on your crazy end time theology, but whatever. We're still storming the gates of hell together, right? It will never be a source of division at Mission Point Community Church. As long as we all agree, Jesus is physically coming back to our world. In fact, let me show you something. Even though today we're not going to be in the book of Revelation, I want to show you what Jesus says about the end times at the start of the book of Revelation. This is a trip to me. And I just want to bring this up to tell you the reason why we as a church are going to refuse to be bullied out of engaging a conversation about the end times because it's confusing or because it's controversial. Revelation chapter 1. The revelation from Jesus Christ, which God gave him to show his servants what must soon take place. He, Jesus, made it known by sending his angel to his servant, John, who testifies to everything he saw. And this is the word of God and the testimony of Jesus Christ. That's how the book of Revelation starts. And then check this out, verse 3. It says, blessed is the one who reads aloud the words of this prophecy. Avoid it. Heaven literally says you are blessed if you read. You should be walking around your house reading the book of Revelation out loud. Like, what are you doing? I'm just trying to be blessed. The enemy loves to let controversy or confusion stir us away from some of the most glorious things. And Jesus says, blessed. I'm confused, but I'm blessed. So I'm not going to shy away from this. I love that. And blessed are those who hear it and take to heart what is written in it, because the time is near. Jesus calls us blessed for engaging this conversation. And so we rebuke the ancient bully and we refuse to be deterred or divided because it's controversial or confusing. So in this series, we're going to talk about some of the controversial views. We're going to stare in the face of some weird symbolisms and funky creatures. And we're just going to just be blessed. We'll talk about kind of the different sequences that different people believe. We'll talk about some of the events that are happening in the world around us right now. But ultimately, we will look for Jesus and what he calls us to in preparation for his return. But for this morning, Matthew chapter 24, that's going to be the home base for our series. And we'll keep coming back to it, even though we'll spend quite a bit of time in the book of Revelation. Matthew chapter 24. This is one of the longest single sections discussing end times. And Jesus is the one speaking about it. So, as we usually do, we're going to read a bit and we'll pause and we'll make some observations, we'll read some more, and we will see how far we get. All right, here we go. Matthew 24, verse 3. As Jesus was sitting on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately. "Tell us," they said, "when will this happen? And what will be the sign of your coming and the end of the age?" Just in case you're tempted to think that we are unique or that we are special. We're not. The question about the end time, its sequence, how are we going to know, has been a matter of obsession for centuries. Even before Jesus went to the cross, the religious community was borderline obsessed with the matters of end times. Just in case we're tempted to think differently. When will the world as we know it end, and how will we know that it is about to happen? It's also worth noting, by the way, that every generation after Jesus returned to heaven was convinced that they were the generation during which Jesus would return to earth. And I don't know if you're keeping track at home, but all of them have been wrong. Except us, of course, right? So you just have to know we are part of a narrative, and something that has been a forefront, intimidating, scary, and yet obsessive conversation for a very, very long time. But most importantly, I cannot tell you how beautiful it is that Jesus answers their question. Jesus answers their question. He doesn't slap them on the wrist and tell them, "Hey, listen, this is too confusing and too controversial. Leave it alone. It's going to be a source of division, so just don't touch it." Jesus answers their question. How will we know? He answers their question. And I'm just telling you, most of the time, the lid on the revelation we have about the end times is not Jesus. It's our curiosity and courage to engage. Verse 4. Jesus answered a very interesting response. "Watch out that no one deceives you. For many will come in my name, claiming I am the Messiah. And they will deceive many." That is an interesting first response from Jesus. He says, "Watch out for deceivers." "Oh, I will be back, but before I come back, there will be posers and pretenders claiming that they are me returning to the world. And they will convince many." Jesus doesn't say they might. Jesus says they will convince. These posers will convince many people, which is a scary thought. Because if you believe the game is over, you're going to stop playing. And you will lose. If I tell you as a freshman that, "Hey, I just want you to know that your freshman midterm is your senior final," and you believe me, you are going to start sleeping in, skipping classes, playing disc golf, not coming back after fall break, and you will flunk out of college because you believe something was over that was far from it. If you believe Jesus Christ is back and he's not back, you're going to call it a wrap on living out his calling. And you're going to put your hope in something or someone who cannot hold your hope. But in either case, Jesus starts by giving his followers a warning. When you start to see an increase of people claiming to be me, pay attention. Pay attention. And do not be deceived. Crazy as that sounds, by the way, there are about 10 people that I'm aware of right now in our world who loudly claim to be Jesus returned to earth. Not to mention a bunch of people, probably in the hundreds, who've died, ironically enough, claiming to be Jesus returned to earth. But more importantly, there are thousands and thousands of people who have believed these individuals and are still believing them today to somehow save them from what they fear the most and deliver to them what it is that they long for the most. There's a character named Wayne Bent. I bet you don't follow him on social media. 24 years ago, apparently God came into his living room and told him that he is the Messiah. So this guy actually has an isolated community with his dozens of followers located outside Clayton, New Mexico. You can literally jump in your car and drive there right now. There's a guy named Sergey Torop. He is an ex-traffic cop who believes that he is the Messiah, that he is the second coming of Jesus Christ. He has about 10,000 followers, with about 4,000 of those who've left their lives and they live in a commune, like this compound off the grid in the Siberian hills today. There's a South Korean guy named Jang Myung, he has been sent apparently to complete the unfinished work of Jesus, and salvation comes through him alone. He has 100,000 followers. Some of you may have heard of Jose Luis de Jesus, which is just that name will help you deceive some people. This guy died about 10 years ago, but he claims to be Jesus, and then he claims to be better than Jesus, and then he claims to be the Antichrist all at the same time. In fact, he had a 666 tattoo on his body, and he encourages followers to have these 666 tattoos on their bodies. He had about 300 churches in about 20 countries, this guy did. And his church was called Growing in Grace. Interestingly enough, a headquarters, Miami, Florida. The point is, Jesus said what he said, and he meant exactly what he said. Many will come and they'll claim to be Jesus returned, and millions will believe them. The problem is, you cannot believe Jesus is coming if you believe Jesus has already come back. And if you believe Jesus has already come back, then whoever it is you're putting your faith in is a poser who cannot hold your hope, and you are moving towards destruction. This is a massive warning Jesus is giving his people. So he announces, yeah, before I come, there will be a lot of deceivers, and he begs essentially, do not be deceived. To which we would say, no way. Me not. Not me. We are Midwestern, very evolved, undeceivable people. Right? We're rolling our eyes like, in the Siberian hills? What is wrong with you? How can you believe David Koresh? Like, what is right? I mean, we'll watch all of these. Like, how did you, Jim Jones? Like, what are you guys thinking? This doesn't apply to us, but the very nature of deception is you do not know you're being deceived while you're being deceived. I can prove it. What if I told you that none of those individuals I listed are real people who've claimed to be Jesus? Did you believe me? Gullible. They are real people, by the way. I wouldn't do that to you. All of a sudden, you start questioning everything. Is your name even Kondo, right? I'm just making a point. Whoa, we could not be deceived. Do you know how much I see of this in me and in others, like where there is a religious individual maybe a preacher of some sort, you know, who has a, maybe a large social media following, and they will say things like, God told me to tell you. Oh yeah, what did God tell you to tell me? Wait a minute, when did he tell you this? Don't worry about it, just trust me. When I get up here to preach, I'm not preaching my own words, I'm preaching what the Lord has given me to give you. Meaning, whatever I say, you've got to take as the word of the Lord. And before long, you have congregations who are like, we've completely changed the way we live. Why? Because some preacher said it. And you can verify what they said? No, but it sounded really good. He even had an accent, right? I'm telling y'all, one of the greatest dangers is the arrogance of believing like being deceived does not apply to me. I'm just saying. I will. If you don't believe me, find somebody who's committed to watching Fox News. Relax. And then find someone who's committed to watching CNN. And then listen to the person who watches CNN talking about the person who's committed to Fox News. How can you believe any of it? You're so deceived. And then the Fox News person looks at the CNN person like, you, blah, 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 sheeple, blah, 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 right? And we look at each other, and here's the reality. In this country right now, half the country believes the other half is completely deceived. And the other half believes you are completely deceived. I'm just telling you, deception doesn't announce itself, right? Because before long, we find ourselves like we're so compelled by a political figure or some kind of a person who promises that they will ward off whatever we fear the most, and they'll deliver what we desire most. And we may not call them a Messiah, but we start to treat them like, and we'll take whatever they say at face value. And the people on the other side are like, you've got to be kidding me. What is wrong with these people? And they're looking at you like, this whole conversation about deception is so important for us to grab a hold of and to start to realize, God, I am so prone to being deceived. I'm so prone to wander. Jesus, you said many will be deceived. Would you do something in us that keeps us alert and keeps us focused on who you are and what you say so that we do not fall into this trap? The moment you say, I cannot be deceived, that is one of the first steps to being deceived. In fact, to say I cannot be deceived is deception. Are you aware of how you might have maybe put a religious figure or political figure in a category they do not belong? And whatever they say is what they say, right? The point is, there will be a growing number of leaders claiming to be rescuers. Don't listen to them, Jesus says. Why? Because there's certain things that must happen leading up to my return that will be obvious, right? If they have not happened yet, then whoever it is claiming to be Jesus, first of all, cannot be. One of the reasons it matters to have conversations about the end times is because once I know some of the sequencing Jesus has given me, that's how I combat deception. Because I'll look at somebody, I'm like, yeah, I appreciate what you say, but those six things haven't yet happened, so you can't be it. So it matters as safeguarding from deception. You cannot say, I don't want to talk about end times, and I'm not going to be deceived. Jesus says, you better know, otherwise you will be deceived. Let's reject the notion of not discussing it because it's controversial or confusing. This is a safeguard to keeping our anticipation for the one and only true Savior, Jesus Christ, coming back. We are never going to get through this. Verse number 6. You will hear of wars and rumors of wars, but see to it that you are not alarmed. Don't be deceived. Don't be alarmed. Such things must happen, but the end is still to come. Nation will rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom. There will be famines. There will be earthquakes in various places. All these are the beginning of birth pains. Wow. Seems as if Jesus is saying some things in the world around you are going to start to intensify and increase. One of those things Jesus says is wars and the threats of war in the world. When that starts to happen, it's not the end, but it should stir the question, might we be getting close? It's interesting that Jesus uses the language, and we'll see it repeated, the language of pregnancy. Because from the time Jesus went back to heaven, if you study the theology of end times, from the moment Jesus went to heaven, history has been at full term, ready to go at any time. There's been that sense. This could happen at any time, which is intended to stir a level of alertness and a level of anticipation. Man, when my wife was at full term with our oldest boy, I can still remember this. Like, it was weird. Like, if my wife said, choo, I'm like, is that it? Are we going? Like, I'm starting to pack. Like, is this it? Is it time? She just sneezed. Or if she said, man, I'm going to grab some water. Water! Water. I remember somewhere that water is significant. Something about water. Is this it, right? And there was just this real anticipation, like edge of my seat. I'm trying to read the signs, knowing this could be any time. It's full term. We're ready to go. That's the language Jesus uses when he talks about the end times. Imagine somebody who's like, don't worry about it. It's just controversial. Right? And then everything, it's just all Braxton Hicks. Don't even worry about it. Right? But Jesus uses this language very intentionally. When you see wars escalate, heaven is never going to fault you for asking, should we be paying attention to this? Should we be packing bags? I'm just telling you, if you're going to choose obsessed or oblivious, don't choose oblivious. I'm not encouraging obsession, but it's a better option. Which, by the way, means now would be a really good time to be asking questions. Because do you know how many active wars are happening in our world right now? I'll tell you. 110 armed wars. Right now. 10 years ago, this time, there were 20. 110. There are 196 countries in the world. That's a lot of war. Forty-five of those wars are happening in the northern part of Africa and the Middle East. Jesus' followers could not have envisioned a world in which 110 wars were happening at the same time. They would not have been able to wrap their minds around the fact that tomorrow marks the 1 year since the first attacks happened in the Middle East, which have stirred this ugly war that have claimed over 43,000 lives of men, women, and children. And it's not just wars, it is wars that are taking place in the space where Jesus was speaking when he talked about this. I'm just saying, might it be something we ought to be paying attention to? What do you think? And Jesus says, oh, and watch out for an increase in natural disasters. It's not the birth, but it is full-term birth pains. You will notice an increase almost as though the earth is writhing. Like, I'm uncomfortable. I'm ready to be done with all of this. It's almost like the earth is just ready to go. And so there's unrest, nothing is doing what it's supposed to do. There's just this upheaval. Natural disasters increased by 500% between 1979 and the year 2019. And they're not showing any signs of slowing down. And by the way, do you know which country has had the most natural disasters in the last year? Any guesses? The U.S. At the top of the list, earthquakes. Question is, did you notice? You're like, I don't live in California. So no. Didn't pay any attention to that. 350 million people in the world are living in famine right now. 350 million. That's almost 100 million more people than lived on earth when Jesus was saying these words. As it gets closer, Jesus says, you start to see the earth acting really strangely. It'll be quaking. It'll be refusing to produce, like it's ready to be done with all the tension and all the pain. And it'll start contractions. And then he adds a human chaos element. Verse number 9, he says, then you will be handed over to be persecuted and put to death. And you will be hated by all nations because of me. At that time, many will turn away from the faith and will betray and hate each other. And many false prophets again will appear. This is a fixture. And they'll deceive many people. Because of the increase of wickedness, the love of most will grow cold. But the one who stands firm to the end will be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all the nations, and then the end will come. Jesus says you are going to notice a growing disdain for the people who authentically look like me and live like me. Y'all will be hated and rejected and abandoned and mistreated and thrown in prison and even put to death. And as the pressure increases on my people, you will start to see a distinction between the posers and the real ones, by the way. Because right now in the church, we can all say whatever we want to say. But Jesus is saying a day is going to come and the pressure is going to increase. And as the pressure increases and the threat of pain increases, you're going to see this line drawn between the real ones and the posers. And man, the posers are going to start to say about, like, distance themselves from the real ones. Like, nope, we've got nothing to do with those extreme Jesus people and their ways. And they will betray each other. They will sell each other out. Like, we have nothing to do with them. If pain and persecution is in the mix, then we have nothing to do with them. And then the deceivers will step in and they'll make the most of this division. And they'll be like, yeah, they're trying to hurt you. And they're trying to take stuff from you. And they're trying to... And it will add to all of the discord that is happening in the world around us. It struck me that Jesus says the love of most will grow cold, but the real ones will keep loving people and carrying the gospel to the ends of the earth. Throughout this series, you're going to hear us return to that. It is all about showing and sharing the love of Jesus, no matter how much the pressure is turned up. I don't know if you knew, Christian persecution is rampant in our world right now. And I'm not talking about people unfriending you because you prefer Taylor Swift to Kid Rock, right? And that's now like a thing, right? No, 36.5 million Christians in the world are experiencing intense attack today. Every day, 13 Christians get thrown in jail for living like and looking like the person of Jesus Christ. And because they're real ones, they're willing to go. Rather than stop loving people and living on mission. By the way, one of the reasons you're going to hear me make regular reference to politics, not because I enjoy politics, but because in the church, I have never seen anything dull the love we had for each other more than politics. Never. People we used to love, and all of a sudden it's like, I found out what you believe and how you vote, and our love has grown cold, and we're betraying each other, and we're selling each other out, and we're saying, they're trying to get me, and this tried, and it has just dulled the love that we have for each other. There's a reason why there's a return to this conversation. 15,000 Christian facilities were attacked or destroyed in the last year. It's happening in our world. And Jesus says, when you see a rise in persecution and a rise in hate for people that you used to love, and all of a sudden people used to be together, now they're not anymore. Love has grown cold, and what you see is vitriol and attacking each other. And it's an attacking and a vitriol that has distracted us from carrying the gospel to the people in our world, because we're still trying to find out, do you agree with me or do you disagree with me? Are you on their side or are you on my side? Are you part of their deceived group or are you part of our group? And we've lost the plot. Love has died and the mission has stalled. And Jesus says, when you see that, that should be another alert. But if you're paying attention, you notice that at the same time, the real ones are being persecuted in increasing measure. And it's almost like the church is being pruned. Which side are you on? The bickering, fighting, and I don't like you because of this, blah, blah, blah. Are you on that side, or are you about the business of loving people and carrying the gospel? That line is going to continue to increase as the end gets closer. Verse number 15. So when you see standing in the holy place the abomination that causes desolation, Jesus is now talking about the Antichrist. Spoken of through the prophet Daniel, let the reader understand. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let no one on the housetop go down to take anything out of the house. Let no one on the field go back to get their cloak. How dreadful it will be in those days for pregnant women and nursing mothers. Pray that your flight will not take place in winter or on the Sabbath. For then, he says, there will be great distress unequaled from the beginning of the world until now and never to be equaled again. Jesus is saying the Antichrist is going to come. You're going to see stuff stirring up in the world. You're going to see wars and rumors of wars. You're going to see natural disasters. You're going to see a lot of division, and all of a sudden there's tension where they didn't used to be. And he says, and then mark this, the Antichrist is going to show up. And we'll talk about this in the coming weeks. The Antichrist is a literal individual who's going to stand in the temple in Jerusalem, and he's going to declare himself to be God. And he's going to demand that everybody pledge allegiance to him and everyone take a mark on them as a proof of allegiance. And anyone who refuses to do that is going to enter into the greatest season of human suffering that we've ever known. Which, by the way, means I'm always looking at Jerusalem to see, like, has the temple started to be rebuilt yet? Because it's not constructed right now. But whoever this individual is, they're going to stand there, and their presence in the temple and their declaration is going to trigger what we often refer to as the tribulation. Jesus said it's going to be such a painful era in human history. Never has it happened in the past. Never would it happen again. Jesus, in fact, says, if I didn't cut those days short, everybody on the earth would die. Now I'm like, that's why I don't read the end time stuff. That stuff right there. Like, I don't want to know that. I don't want to know that. And Jesus says, yes, you do. I promise you, you want to be aware of this. And again, you don't get that mark of the beast. You're not able to buy, you're not able to sell. And it starts this level of persecution. And believe me, at that point, the real ones from the posers will be very distinguished, because the pressure will have intensified more greatly than it ever has. Here's what I was mentioning, verse 22. Jesus says, if those days had not been cut short, no one would survive. But for the sake of my people, the elect, those days will be shortened. Again, how crazy would it be for us to ignore this entire conversation? Verse 23. At that time, if anyone says to you, look here, here's the Messiah, or there he is, do not believe it. For the false messiahs and false prophets will appear to perform great signs and wonders to deceive, even if possible, the elect. Are you seeing the number of deceptions Jesus is saying? My people are going to find people to follow, and they'll be so thrown off the mission. And then in this era, there's even going to be individuals who can perform miraculous signs and wonders. And if you're going through a difficult time, you want to follow someone who can perform miracles. Well, I don't want to know that. Jesus says, you want to know that so you can be prepared. Verse 25, see, Jesus says, I have told you ahead of time. So if anyone tells you, there he is out in the wilderness, do not go. Or here he is in the inner rooms, do not believe it. I'm just going to keep reading. In fact, band, you guys can come on out. I'm just going to read the rest of it. Verse 27 says, this is so good. For as lightning, right? This is Antichrist, flexing and dark days in the world. Verse 27, but as lightning that comes from the east is visible even in the west, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. Wherever there is a carcass, there the vultures will gather. If you're looking for a life verse, verse 28, right there. Verse 29, immediately after the distress of those days, immediately those days will be interrupted. The sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light. The stars will fall from the sky and the heavenly bodies will be shaken. Then will appear the sign of the Son of Man in heaven. Woo! And then all the peoples of the earth will mourn when they see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. And he will send his angels with a loud trumpet call, and they will gather his elect from the four winds, from one end of the heavens to the other. Jesus is coming back. I love this because Jesus is saying, no, I'm telling you because they're going to be jab steps, but it's not me. When I return, no one is going to have to tell you. You're not going to have to consult anybody to ask, hey, is Jesus coming back? It'll be like lightning in the sky. Every single person will see it. You will not miss my return. If you have to ask, is that Jesus? It's not me. Y'all will know. And my angels will sweep the earth, gathering my people when I return. And I am going to squish the Antichrist like a bug. And I will put an end to the darkness, and I will usher in my light. I'm telling you all that so that when things get difficult, you do not forget, ooh, I'm on my way. I'm on my way. Kicking butt, not even taking names. It is intended to inspire hope in us. And it's intended to stir in us an alertness that says, I want to be paying attention. Jesus says, when this happens, in fact, if you read the rest of this passage, he says, just as it was in the days of Noah, listen to me, just as it was in the days of Noah, The flood was coming and no one paid attention. They just keep living their lives like nothing was happening. And Jesus said, it's exactly the way it's going to be when I come back. I am giving you all warnings. I'm telling you the signs, and most of the world is going to pay no attention. And so when I return, they'll be mourning, completely surprised. Like, where did that come from? And Jesus is saying, I'm telling you ahead of time. So you be ready. And you're going to hear us say that over the course of this series. When it comes to the conversation about end times, it is less important that you are right, and it's more important that you are ready. And that's going to be the invitation. Man, are we loving the people in our world more and more? Is love intensifying in us? And are we more determined to carry the gospel to the ends of the earth? No matter what the cost is, because it'll be worth it when Jesus splits the clouds and comes back to get his people and put a wrap on things. So let's lean into this conversation with hope, with joy, with a little defiant courage that says, bring it on. And with eyes wide open, looking for the signs that will stir in us like we've got to go. We've got to get busy about the work that Jesus has called us to. So, Father, thank you for your son, Jesus. Jesus, thank you that you're coming back. I beg you that that would cause in us a great joy, a great hope, and it will stir in us your great mission. Thank you, Jesus, that as dark as things feel and seem right now in our world, you are on your throne and you are reigning through it all, and you are victorious over sin and you are victorious over death, and you will continue to be that. Fill us with your courage in Jesus' name. Amen. Won't we stand? Let's sing.
Thanks so much for tuning into today's message. We hope to see you next Sunday. We would love to personally invite you to one of our services at 9 and 10:45 a.m. in the Performing Arts Center in Warsaw Community High School at One Tiger Lane in Warsaw, Indiana. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please make sure to subscribe, review, and connect with us on social media by following Mission Point CC. You can also contribute to what God is doing through Mission Point. Simply visit missionpoint.net/give and give a gift today. Thanks again for joining us. Have a great week.